Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Get all the Masterforce outdoor power equipment you need to maintain your yard at Menards. Own the outdoors with Masterforce 80-volt power equipment, delivering all the power of gas without the maintenance. The entire 80-volt line is powered by brushless motors for ultimate performance and productivity. From lawnmowers to leaf blowers, string trimmers, and more, find everything you need to create the lawn of your dreams with Masterforce power equipment at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Raina Troy Hotline.
Alicia, Michael, what's going on?
We know you have takes. We have takes.
I'm actually surprised that your rant line, rave line, whatever, isn't completely full.
Why can't we just win a game?
Can I blame Michael Castillo for this?
Can I blame Bob Connolly for this?
Could I put on a zebra shirt and just go out there?
Scratch, claw, up against the wall.
Can't explain that what I'm feeling right now, guys.
I can't believe it.
Let's open up that rave line! Woohoo!
Oh, I can't believe USD has hired Lincoln Riley. Oh, yeah.
Hello, everybody. We're back. Episode 478 coming to you on Monday, March 20th. If you're listening to us live on YouTube, yes, we have hooked up the soundboard. We got the intro music. Filing in live now, so we're all good. As always, we're going to talk about USC football here on this episode. A little bit of March Madness talk, both football and basketball, of course. Some Big Ten news and so much more. As always, you can follow us on Twitter at Reign of Troy. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/Reign of Troy. Be sure to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you can find a podcast. We are there. Our email address is reignoftroy@fanside.com. I'm your host, Michael Castillo, joining along with my co-host, Alicia Daratola.
Hello, everybody.
Hello. Alicia, you said it a little gloomy there. What can I say that might have been...
Pessimistic Alicia is out in full force. Huh? No, pessimistic Alicia is not in full force.
Are you sure?
Because we have the soundboard back, and it makes me so happy.
I actually think this is a case of optimistic Alicia.
Wow. Exactly. Like, it's been a while. It's been a long time, actually, since we've been able to use those. We used to probably overuse them in the past, and there were probably listeners who were like, thank God their soundboard broke.
it's
now
true.
It's back, so yeah. our friends on YouTube can all experience the joys of our million drops. And although I think we're limited in the number we can use on the soundboard,
so only the
classics.
We got a new mixer soundboard combo thing. We're super excited to play around with it, and we're always game for feedback. So let us know how the audio goes. You're live on YouTube. And if you listen to us on Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts as well, email address is reignoftroy@fanside.com. We do have the soundboard stuff. Not that much on it, like you said, but there is some oldies.
Rose Bowl, baby.
Yeah, there's some good ones in here. So we're going to talk about that and so much more, including March Madness, of course, as we talked about. But before we get into anything, we gotta get to a 5-star review we got from Fight On Raul. I can only guess that is the former Real Madrid legend who listens to the podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, Raul. Yeah, this is 5 stars, and it's titled Fight On Forever. And it says, the Reign of Troy podcast is one of the most comprehensive and engaging USC Trojans football podcasts out there. Hosted by Michael Castillo and Alicia Daratola, the podcast covers everything from game analysis to breaking news, while also providing a healthy dose of humor and personality. What sets the Reign of Troy podcast apart is its deep knowledge and understanding of USC football. The hosts have a wealth of experience and expertise, and they use it to provide listeners with in-depth insights into the team's performance, coaching decisions, and overall strategy. In addition to their expert analysis, Michael and Alicia are also skilled storytellers and conversationalists. They have a great rapport and a natural chemistry that makes each episode feel like you're listening in on a conversation between friends. Overall, the Reign of Troy podcast is a must-listen for any USC football fan or anyone who loves college football. With its expert analysis, up-to-date news, and entertaining commentary, it's no wonder why this podcast has become a fan favorite. Whether you're a diehard USC fan or just love great football analysis, the Rant and Troy podcast is definitely worth a listen. Thank you, Raul. I'm going to give that review a five stars. It sounds like we paid a PR firm to write us.
Yeah, is he on the payroll?
Yeah, I mean, people pay good money for that kind of PR.
Geez. If you want to start a Wikipedia page for us, too,
I love it.
Write a whole thing. That'd be awesome. I mean, that's like the back jacket of a book.
Yeah. Isn't that super professional? I mean, and it hits. I mean, as we always say, like it hits on the things that it's really meaningful to us because like that's exactly what we're going for, especially conversations between friends. That's always what we've been going for.
Yeah.
We want our listeners to feel like they could be sitting in a room with us having the same conversation. That's where we're at. So thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Raul, for that. We're super excited to always get a review. You can always leave one over on Apple Podcasts. We'll be sure to put it together and read it on the pod. Richard in the chat says, good thing you two have chemistry. Wonder if anything will come of that. I don't know. That's a question for another day, perhaps. Anyways, Alicia, we got news to get to. So let's get to some news before we start talking about March Madness. All right, let's start with some more Big Ten talk, Big Ten rivalry news via The Athletic's Nicole Auerbach and Scott Docterman. Put together an article over on The Athletic. It's behind a paywall. Go read it. Don't want to completely quote everything in it, of course, because it is premium content. But the big takeaway here is this paragraph, which is like the second paragraph of the article. At this point, it doesn't look like USC or UCLA will have Ohio State or Michigan as a protected game, two sources who attended last week's Big Ten meeting said.
Yeah, I think this just tracks with what we talked about when we discussed the scheduling sort of question and who protected rivals would be. It just makes too much sense for the Big Ten to understand that you're asking a lot of your major brands to have them play every year. It's hard enough for Ohio State and Michigan to play each other every year without having to add USC going up against one of those teams every single year. And while that would be fantastic from a college football fan's perspective, from an administrative perspective, that's a nightmare. Sometimes there is too much of a good thing, and that could end up sabotaging both sides of the equation on year in and year out. Especially if you have, like, can you imagine the nightmare scenario where it's USC, Michigan, and Ohio State, and Ohio State beats Michigan, but then Ohio State loses to USC, and then, you know, USC lost to UCLA or whatever in a disaster scenario, and then you've added an extra loss to all of those teams that you didn't necessarily need to have going. So, yeah, it makes a lot of sense. I also thought the article was interesting because they discussed the three different models that they're going with. Or that they think they're going to go with in terms of scheduling. And it's all very complicated. And you're right, Michael, to suggest that people go read the article because there's a lot that goes into it. But it was interesting sort of seeing that there's the sort of rigid, one protected rival. There's the more rigid, like two or three protected rivals. And then there's kind of a hybrid option that would be each team has whatever number of protected rivals that they decide and then sort of go wild with their scheduling every year and sort of play it by ear almost. And I would be very, very surprised if they end up doing that one, because that just sounds like a nightmare to work out every year. But that also sounds the most intriguing because you really could manipulate your schedule in some really, really entertaining ways. So it's really going to be what the Big Ten is up for. But it was nice to read an article where they talked about how like the Big Ten was taking into account that they didn't want USC and UCLA to like have to travel long road trips back to back or something like that. They were going to take like the mileage that those teams are doing. And which weeks you're doing your road trip to Maryland in and all of that. Like, they are putting a lot of thought into the things that I think a lot of USC fans complained for a long time about with the Pac-12, that they didn't seem to put, at least it, on the surface, it didn't feel like they were putting thought into this could really disadvantage this big brand of ours. And we need to make sure that that's not something that comes into play. Now, right. Does that mean USC is not going to get screwed by something in the schedule? No, everyone gets screwed in every single schedule, but it was nice to sort of read a little bit about the process behind it in the Big 10, and to even just have these things be brought up and say, they are considering this, they are trying to minimize these complications, that it's just sort of nice to see, nice to hear.
Yeah, I go back to the idea of, like, you don't want SC and UCLA to play Ohio State and Michigan, because the whole point of leaving the Pac-12 is not to have the same issues that the Pac-12 had. One of those being the constant, you know, beating each other up thing that the Pac-12 suffered every single season. And part of that was because of the 9-game schedule. And the Big Ten already has the 9-game schedule. And the Big Ten has, you know, done a lot of the things that the Pac-12 people are not excited about the Pac-12 about, which is, you know, beating up on their own and, you know, having a worthy champ not make the playoff. Like, that's happened to the Big Ten too. And so you want to avoid that. The Big Ten wants to avoid that when they go out and they add new schools. And then if you're SC, you want to make sure that if you're actually going to go out and change conferences, you don't want to end up in a place where the same thing's going to happen to you before that happened before. And to me, that's not having that extra game against a great team every single year. Every other year, every so often, yeah, you're going to have a schedule that's going to be extra hard because it just is how it is, right? But if you can help it, every year you don't have to go to Ann Arbor or Columbus. So we'll see how that continues to be. Of course, the schedule for next year, probably still a long ways away. Probably won't see it until after the 2023 football season. Next,
I think for the record, I believe the timeline at the least is to decide on a model by the summer. So, and that's not finishing the schedule. That's by the summer, they're going to decide which way they're going to set out to do the schedule. So yeah, it's going to be a little ways away.
Yeah. And the model could be that they, you know, announce the rotation, but not the days.
Yeah.
The dates of the actual games for next season. Let's go to the other Big Ten sort of news. This comes from CBS, and Dennis Dodd spoke to Arizona president Robert Robbins. Great name, Bob Robbins. Love that.
I don't know. It's a choice. Not his choice, it's parents' choice, but it's a choice.
It's good. Anyways, Alicia, what did he have to say to Dennis Dodd?
Yes, he said, USC started this whole thing. I think UCLA was a reluctant follower in this whole thing, but they needed a travel partner close by, so it makes sense. If Oregon calls Washington up and says, hey, I can double the amount of money you guys are getting, come with me to the Big Ten, Washington is going to say, okay, I'm in. They would love to have gone. When I heard it first, the deal was going to be USC and Oregon. That makes sense. Their TV market is not that big, but they play in different colored uniforms and they win. That's where I would have started this thing off. I think Fox wanted to consolidate LA and not let anybody else in. I think it's brilliant. Well played. So basically what he's saying is that USC decided it wanted to pursue the Big Ten and that Oregon was initially the choice to go with them, but that Fox wanted the LA market cornered. And so they made it, they pushed for USC and UCLA, which, I don't know, do you have thoughts on this? Because I have thoughts on it.
I mean, my only thing is I don't understand the idea of cornering the LA market. Once you have SC, you have the LA market. And that's not to say that UCLA doesn't help. I think UCLA is absolutely one of the schools that you'd want, for sure, because of all the reasons we've ever discussed, you know, the power teams and whatnot. But at the same point, like, I think that if you're – so much of this is so convoluted and I think sort of overspoken about the different, you know, TV markets. there are Oregon fans in LA. The LA market affects Oregon. I know that, you know, it's not as, you know, the metrics aren't the quite same as the, you know, Portland area and all that, right? But like, you can still do that with Oregon and you get Portland. Like, I don't understand this idea of just like getting both from a TV perspective. Either way, I don't care. It had to be somebody, and it makes more sense, I think, to have UCLA as the direct travel partner, especially when it comes to basketball. So yeah, shrug. I don't really care. It all makes a lot of sense to me. Richard in the chat said that UCLA seemed really reluctant, and that's kind of been the vibe, and maybe not reluctant, but like, you know, sort of been a passenger along the whole way. And you know, good for them. Like, good for them to recognize that it's okay to be the passenger to the Big Ten in this scenario, right?
I would agree that UCLA feels very much like a passenger. I think that's why there's this sense that like UCLA was reluctant. And I said, honestly, yeah. I think Richard was being a little bit facetious there. He was being sarcastic.
No, but like,
but no, but the idea is clearly this wasn't UCLA's idea. Clearly, right. UCLA has had the greater complications because of the UC system and that whole thing that they've had to go through where the Cal and the Regents are trying to, you know, get some money back from them and all this. Yeah. Certainly it's a more complicated process for UCLA. I think that's why there's this perception that UCLA was,
reluctance, not the exact word.
Yeah. Yes. Reluctance, not the exact word. As Kenny points out, like, their fans seem more upset about it than USC fans. USC fans, for the most part, from what I saw, were in a range from gung ho to, I'd rather stay with the Pac-10, kind of where I'm at was like, well, yeah, I'd rather stay with the Pac-12 because I do think the regional stuff in college football is kind of the whole fun of it, but also like for more money. Absolutely. Yes. USC is making a very savvy decision that's probably going to net it national championships down the line. I don't mind it so long as that follows, you know? Right. So, you know, like from that perspective, yeah, it does seem like UCLA is less of a driving force because they weren't the driving force behind it. It's very clearly clear that USC was the driving force behind it. What I'm skeptical about is this idea that USC would have ever left UCLA behind. I don't think that USC, I cannot imagine that USC's first choice was Oregon. I don't think that's the case. I think USC might have envisioned, if USC had written it up, that it would have been USC and UCLA and let's bring Oregon and Washington, or let's bring Oregon and somebody and do four teams to the Big Ten. But, you know, that's all more of a complication. I can't imagine USC walking away from the UCLA rivalry if given the choice. Like, you're telling me that if given the choice, USC would have taken Oregon over UCLA. I don't see that happening, especially because, as you rightly pointed out, and I don't think this is being talked about enough, UCLA basketball is a bigger deal than it should be a bigger deal than it currently is. Like, UCLA basketball has sort of been in a little bit of a rut, but like when UCLA is good, not a little bit of a rut, a longer rut, but like UCLA basketball as a basketball brand is
it's a bit of a
brand.
Hot take.
What is it? Is that
it's a hot take to say.
What's the hot
take? I think we can joke they've won one title in 48 years, but like,
yeah,
you know, I think it's a, they're a number two seed in the tournament,
yes,
right?
Like they're yeah, but that's my point. That's exactly my point, is that UCLA hasn't won a national title, but UCLA is still a program that should be looking to be the sort of big blue blood that wins national titles in the basketball sphere. So if you're talking about if you're talking about just from a football perspective, would it be better for USC to bring Oregon along from a football perspective? I guess so. But like, at no point would you as USC look at it and say like, I'm dragging UCLA along with me and going to have to beg the Big Ten to take on UCLA, because why would they want UCLA? No, like UCLA sells itself as well in this scenario. Like, I don't think USC needed to do all of the rowing on getting the two
things here. One, basketball never matters with any of this. It really doesn't.
It doesn't matter as much, certainly.
Because if it did, UConn wouldn't have been thrown away to the side that's they fair. Did this entire thing. You can argue that UConn was the top, you know, three brand in college football, especially on the East Coast, where the East Coast doesn't have the premier college brands in terms of size, right? UConn would have never been thrown away to the side. Kansas would have never been thrown away to the side. Like,
yeah,
basketball does not matter in terms of how these decisions get made. Number two, yeah, I'm sort of with you. I think SC was always going to have UCLA in the mix. Whether or not they're the first choice or not, I think is irrelevant in how this all works out. Because I can't see SC or UCLA looking at this in a sort of like Texas or Texas A&M-ish way where they're willing to throw everything away.
Yeah.
I mean, SC clearly was willing to throw away the Pac-12 history and their, you know, 100 years of history with Cal and Stanford and all of that away to do this. But I maybe I'm naive, but I can't believe that they would also do that to UCLA too.
The only like counterpoint I could give to myself on this is that like the driving forces behind USC even having the idea of saying, hey, let's pursue a Big Ten move. It's noteworthy that this move comes after USC finally hires an athletic director who doesn't have any ties to the university and doesn't give a crap. Not that Mike Bone obviously gives a crap about the history of USC athletics, but like he's not tied into and his, you know, his people that he brought with him that are doing the legwork here they don't have the same affinity to these rivalries and to these historic sort of ties to the West Coast that the traditional USC athletic department would. So maybe it was a like Brandon Sosna is sitting there thinking to himself, like, if I'm USC and I'm going to the Big Ten, I'm taking Oregon with me because that's the next biggest brand in the Pac-12 football scene. Like, well, it's entirely possible that that was the discussion.
That was the name that was going to get the most like heads to turn and take the whole thing seriously.
Yeah.
Because you have to think about where SC was when this all went down. Like, we're talking about 2 years ago at this point, right? And I don't know that they go to the, not that I know all the information, I certainly don't, but I don't think they go to the Big Ten expecting this all to go down exactly as it did.
Yeah.
This is a leverage play, if anything. If it doesn't work out to, you know, then go to the Pac-12 and say, hey, we did this, blah, blah, blah. Now look at our other options. Give us, you know, a bigger cut of the pie. Do what Texas did in the Big 12. Go full heel. All of those things, right? So when it's in the argumentative stages of, like, how you're presenting this, it doesn't necessarily mean that those are the final, like, true opinions. So I don't know. There's flexibility there for sure. I don't think it matters in the end. In the end, it's SC and UCLA, and SC and UCLA are not leaving each other, which I think is super important given how much it still doesn't make any sense in my head that SC is not going to be in the Pac-12 anymore.
It's next year.
I know. It's.
Can you believe that? I can't. It's weird. I mean, and it's weird because we keep talking about, like, we got to get to Autzen because this is the last time that USC is going to play Oregon at Autzen in a conference game, at least.
Yeah.
And I keep having that conversation with people and still I haven't processed that, like, it's next year.
Right. Yeah, it is. It is coming super, super quickly. Kenny in the chat says, by bringing UCLA, you're bringing the majority of championships, football and basketball, from the pack. Absolutely. Rema Murty says UCLA benefits in basketball and SC benefits in football. Exactly. Agree. And Richard says the Pac-12 money analysis made it pretty clear that the basketball slice was pocket change in comparison. And it is, at the end of the day, mostly about money. 95%, 90% about money. Yeah,
for sure. I also think that, like, UCLA athletics as a brand is a big enough brand. Like, UCLA football doesn't necessarily have the esteem that USC does or Ohio State or Michigan or whatever.
That's a take.
But UCLA athletics is a, like, you know, I think it's pretty fair to say that like people recognize the UCLA brand. People know what their football uniforms look like. Like it's not like they're in complete obscurity on the football side of things either. You and I are constantly saying that UCLA should be significantly better than they are and have been on the in the football arena. Just like I'm going to make an argument about USC basketball in a few minutes, but like that's the thing is, yes, it benefits UCLA in basketball and USC in football, but it also works the other way around. This is going to benefit UCLA football immensely if they choose to let it.
Yes.
In ways that could help UCLA reach the pinnacle of what they could be as a football program, which it's scary to say from a USC perspective, but they could be very, very high up there. Like there's no reason that they couldn't be.
Sure.
So
I always find it funny to me that when we're talking about brands and like going between something like UCLA and Oregon and Washington, just the nitpicking is so beyond anything. Because if you ask a random person off the street to name a school on the West Coast, they're going to say SC and UCLA before anything else. If you ask a college football fan anywhere who identifies as a college football fan to name a team on the West Coast, they're probably going to name Oregon just as much as they mention SC and all that stuff, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's just how it is. These are brands, and they have bigger brands, bigger brand power in different ways. And if you're the Big Ten, you want to maximize all of that. So SC and UCLA is where it is at the end. Let's talk about March Madness. We want to talk about a couple of things, both on the football side and the basketball side. We'll hold off on the whole Andy Enfield discussion for a few more minutes, because I know that people are Kenny is up for it.
Yeah.
West Texas Mike might not be. But let's talk about the football side of things. ESPN.com has put together a 64-team college football tournament. And they've put together the results so far of the first two rounds that they've sort of put together. SC is a number 3 seed. This is designed as if it's going into the 2023 season. So where it stands now has nothing to do with 2022. So theoretically, this is Dorian Singer at wide receiver for USC. It's not Addison. This is the 2023 offseason team for where USC is right now. They get a number 3 seed in the East region. And ESPN has them winning their first two games, beating the number 14 seed Duke 38-17. And in the second round, beating number 11 Illinois, who knocks off the 6 seed Kentucky, and the Trojans beating them 37-24, setting up a Sweet 16 matchup with the number 2 seed in the East, Tennessee. So the Sweet 16, this is how it stands in the South. You have number 1 versus number 4, Georgia and Ole Miss. The 2-3 matchup in the South is Oregon-Washington. In the Midwest, it's number 1, Michigan versus number 4, Notre Dame. And number 2, LSU against number 6, Wisconsin. Wisconsin, one of two teams that are the lower seeds that have made it into the Sweet 16, according to ESPN's projections here. The East, Ohio State is the number 1 seed with they'll play Texas A&M, and then it's SC and Tennessee at the 2-3. Then in the West, it's Alabama, the number 1 seed, versus Texas, the number 5. And then Florida State and Pitt are the 3-10 matchup in the Sweet 16 as well. So I guess there's 3 lower seeds, Texas, Pitt, and Wisconsin, 6, 5, and 10. Alicia, what say you about this whole thing? Because I got thoughts, but I want to know your thoughts.
I think this is a cool idea. I think it would actually be easier to do this based on 2022 teams, because you actually knew what those teams were,
yes,
what they did, and like you could actually judge them against each other in a semi-real way. In this case, it's like, well, how does USC do in this deal against a Tennessee team that like on instinct right now, I would say if you told me USC and Tennessee were going to play next this coming year, I would take USC. I mean, I think that it would be an absolute barn burner, but I'd take USC. That could be really dumb if USC's defense doesn't get marginally better or significantly better. Or this could be another blowout if USC's defense gets it a lot better. And then, you know, suddenly it's why was USC a 3 seed and not like, you know, right, competing for a 1 seed kind of question mark. So I think there's a lot of questions. I think it's sort of an interesting exercise. But I, like, it would also be kind of fun. And I'm not sure how, like, I just imagine, how could you do this? I think if you wanted to hold, and I know I'm getting off the rails here a little bit, so I'll let you say your piece about like what ESPN actually did. But like, if you wanted to do an actual large scale playoff tournament in college football, you'd like, how would you, like, it's almost like you'd have to do pods that you put teams into in an almost like Champions League, but not, because it would be single elimination still.
You don't think they could just go 6 weeks?
Okay.
You mean for the seeding?
No. Okay. So that's right. If it's 6 weeks of playoffs,
yeah,
then the 6 weeks before that are conference games that set your seed. Like, it's like a playoff preseason. Because that way you can determine whether or not...
No, you just have the regular season, and then you just go into 6 weeks of playoffs.
On top, so you'd play a 12-game season.
You might cut it to 10. Yeah,
see, I was thinking, how do you fit this into a 12-week season? But that's right, because if you're like, if you're the team that wins the national title, what do you play, 15 games? You play 15,
yeah.
So let's say you do a 10-game season, and then you do this sort of round robin. Maybe you have like a consolation bracket or something
maybe
like that.
Maybe it's an 11 game season. Yeah. I think there's a way to do it. I think, you know,
It would just be really, really fun to like see this play out, because how else would you get these matchups?
I will say I'm more of a fan of a 64 team tournament than I am of the 12 personally. But I look at this thing and, first of all, I have major gripes with the seeding, and then I see that the seeding is based on SP Plus, and I like SP Plus. So,
but SP Plus is also has its flaws, and like, I think, yes, Bill Connelly would be the first person to admit that, like,
sure,
as a like, you know, net doesn't do the 64 team.
Well, it's not designed to
yeah,
pull
it's
up
not designed a, to create a 64 right. team. Bracket, but you got to do it somehow. And if you're right. ESPN, it makes sense to just do it that way.
Yeah. Kenny in the chat says this totally takes away from regular season. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. It does. And you know, I have gripes about the basketball tournament that is the national champion. Should it really be decided by a 64 team tournament in which anyone can get knocked out at any point? Like, I don't think it truly determines the winner. I think the person who gets through, certainly you can say, has been validated, but that doesn't mean that if you know, like, Arizona lost to Princeton, right? That doesn't mean that Princeton's a better basketball team. And
yes,
and I know that that's not what the point of March Madness is, but I don't know. So,
but that's
to go back to the seed thing.
Yeah. Even this kind of tournament though would not be seeking to decide who is the best football team necessarily, because as Kenny pointed out in the chat, no, but it's very fun. And like, that's the whole point of this. The whole point of the 64 team, 68 team as it is that, yes, you can have Princeton do that. You can have Fairleigh Dickinson do that. And would like you, if you had a 5-game series or even a 3-game series, you couldn't have that kind of fun thing.
Right.
And so it really is about the fun more than like crowning a legitimate champion, which, well, you know, how do you do that? I don't.
To crown a legitimate champion, you have to play like a 7-game series at the end, which is just unrealistic in football anyways. But to go to the seedings, my gripe about the seedings, and I get it's SP Plus rankings, so whatever, but this is, you know, preseason rankings in general. I think the Pac-12 is going to be kick-ass this year. I think we all think that, right? And you look at the seeds, Oregon is a number 2 seed. Washington and SC are 3s. Utah 4, UCLA a 5. Oregon State is a 7 seed. A 7 seed?
I think these are fair discussions because, and maybe I'm reading the seeding wrong on the way ESPN has it, but like the way I read it is like Penn State is ahead of
first
Oregon.
Of all, and they have Oregon State losing their first round matchup to Maryland. Like, get out of here.
Oh, that is absolutely get out false. Of here. Oregon State would spank Maryland. There's no question about that. The Pac-12 in this setup, the Pac-12 would pull off some upsets, I think, quote unquote upsets.
I tend to think that. I think that's why when you get to the Sweet 16, there are there's three teams there. I think there could be more. Anyways, really quick, does SC have a chance to beat Tennessee?
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. I think
so too. I think SC in a one game scenario like this against Tennessee. Yes. I think that a 64-team tournament like this makes SC's chances of getting to the end more likely because what happens, what do we see in March Madness? Oh, it comes down to guard play and shooting, right? Like, that's what everybody talks about. You know, that means scoring. And in a one-game situation, like, and I know football is a one-game situation, obviously, but in a tournament like this, I think you can get through like just outscoring teams more likely than you could normally with in a normal bowl game scenario where you have multiple weeks to prepare.
I think certainly you'd like USC's chances just because it's sort of go wild and be unpredictable and see what happens.
So if SC gets through Tennessee, they got to play the winner of Ohio State and Texas A&M.
Which
could they do that?
I think certainly they could beat one of those teams. Ohio State, obviously, a lot more difficult in that scenario. But also, you know, USC has Caleb Williams and Lincoln Riley running the show on offense. And
exactly,
still
the best player in college football.
Still, the big question is on defense. But when it comes down to it, like, I don't know what USC's defense is. I do know what USC's offense is. So I'm just going to keep betting on that offense.
Yeah. And then, of course, FC gets through that. They'd have to play most likely Alabama out of the West. And things would get difficult
I agree with Richard in the chat. The big advantage for USC in the scenario is the chances of a juggernaut being knocked out in the bracket opening up, which is the first thing I said to you when we talked about putting this in the rundown is like, yeah, because like there's a chance you don't have to face Georgia because something wild happens earlier in the tournament.
But Malcolm points out that more games means more chances that SC bounces out. I mean,
absolutely.
Case in point, SC lost to Tulane in the Cotton Bowl. So
yes, absolutely.
It can go either way. Yeah. All right, let's talk about basketball. USC, of course, eliminated from the NCAA tournament in the round of 64 by Michigan State, 72-62 in Columbus. Boogie Ellis had a rough, rough morning, shooting a 3 of 12 from the field, only scored 6 points. Drew Peterson, the other veteran guard for the Trojans, only scored 11. You can't have your two best players combined for 17 points when SC's offense goes through the both of those guys, and it ends up in a loss for the Trojans as the number 10 seed trying to get win number 6 for Andy Enfield in the NCAA tournament, and it doesn't go through. So let's have the Enfield discussion. Alicia, he's been here for 10 seasons. He's won 205 games. He's made 5 NCAA tournaments in 9 eligible seasons. Of course, the COVID season in 2019-20 had no tournament. He's won 5 NCAA tournament wins games with USC, 2 in 2017 and 3 in 2021. He's made 1 Elite Eight in 10 years and 1 Sweet 16 in 10 years. They did that the same year, 2021. For reference, SC has 2 Elite Eights in our lifetimes and 3 Sweet 16s in our lifetime. 4 24-plus win seasons. He's finished 3rd or better in 5 of the past 6 Pac-12 seasons. His record against high-flying UCLA is a even 11-11, including 2 top 10 upsets. And 7 of those 11 wins came by double digits. In recruiting, he signed the number 1 player in the 23 2023 class, Isaiah Collier, and has three times signed top 10 recruiting classes according to 24/7 Sports Composites. But Alicia, I think you're going to tell me that it's not good enough.
It's a question of what USC aspires to with USC basketball. And it's a question, I'm perfectly willing to pose it as a question. What does USC aspire to in basketball? Because if you look at it objectively, and USC points this out on social media when it can, objectively, this is arguably the greatest era of USC basketball in sort of modern times. There was a real success for USC way back when. But the last 10 years in terms of just straight up success, the metrics that you can put out and list outside, USC has done better than the program has ever done in these last 10 years. So has the Enfield era been a success? I think you can objectively say, for the most part, yes. If what USC aspires to is middling, sort of your success every season is whether or not you make the tournament, and then you sort of roll the dice and see how that goes.
Right.
Personally, I think that if USC wants to be okay with that, then they should keep Andy Enfield, because I think we've seen his ceiling. He's going to recruit well. And he's going to stock the team with individual talents that can maybe pull you to an Elite Eight, or as a team, you know, come together as an Elite Eight. I don't want to act like it was just Evan Mobley that drove that team to the Elite Eight, but mm-hmm. That team was pretty loaded in terms of ability and talent, veterans and young talented guys and all that. That was a perfect storm for USC. If that's what you want to see from USC basketball, absolutely keep Enfield, sign him to a lifetime contract. But you're never going to do more than that, in my opinion. You're going to continue to live in this in-between where you're never bad, you're never truly bad, but you're never truly good either. You have good players, but you never compete for the Pac-12 title.
I would argue that they are competing.
You blow it.
Finishing in the top three 5 out of 6 years is competing for the Pac-12 title.
Okay, you're finishing in the top three, but are you seriously you are going to win the Pac-12? He's never won the Pac-12 tournament, which is something that we've seen USC do in the past. So his tournament performances in general do leave plenty to be desired.
Sure.
The regular season performance, I personally, this is my take on it, is that USC's brand of basketball is not very entertaining because it's so frustrating, because you do see the makings of a good team and that team lets you down every other game.
Right.
And so why turn on a USC? Why get excited about USC basketball when you know you're going to be disappointed, unless you go in expecting to lose every game? And then, you know, maybe you'll be excited every once in a while when you beat UCLA. I saw a funny tweet when USC got knocked out that Andy Enfield needs to find a way to convince his players that they're playing UCLA every time they take the court. And that's true. That feels very true. I think there's a very Clay Helton
pessimistic Alicia is out in full force.
To me, it's very Clay Helton-ish, which, you know, works with that soundbite, in that you can write down the things that are being accomplished, but when you look at the teams that are on the players that have worn a USC jersey, the teams that have come together, are they being maximized? Are you seeing a team that lives up to what it's capable of, or are you seeing a team that is sort of sticking to the middle and never quite paying it off, you know? And I think that one of my big arguments continues to be that you can ride that Elite Eight run to the end of the earth, but why wasn't that team seeded higher than they, why were they, I think they were a 6 seed or a 5 seed. Why wasn't that team a two seed? Why wasn't that team you look at the players on that team, you look at the composition of that team, why were they where they were in that season? I don't think this is a very good year to have the discussion necessarily, because things did go wrong for USC. The you know, next great big man that USC brought in had a heart condition, heart failure. Like, mm-hmm. it was a random, like, you can't control that. And you didn't have him for large stretches of the season. USC dealt with injury. This wasn't the most talented USC basketball team. I don't think in a vacuum that you can look at a loss to a Tom Izzo coached Michigan State team in a 10-7 matchup is like the end of the world in terms of, right. USC basketball failures. I don't even think it's a particular failure. You know, but I think my issue is I continue to watch this USC basketball team as coached by Andy Enfield, and I just continue to be disappointed. And for me, I don't see why USC basketball can't rise above the level that they're at. And I think that's really the issue here, right? It's a question of, if you fire Enfield, what are the chances that you're going to get someone better than him? Well, it's at best 50-50, at best.
I'm torn on that side of things, because I think there absolutely is a Bo Pelini thing here, where if you fired Enfield right now, it's because he's not winning championships, right?
I mean, if you fired Enfield right now, to be honest, it's to me because he's not winning Pac-12 championships.
Those are championships. Yes. Yeah, that's what I mean. He's not winning championships.
I don't think USC, like, it's not like I'm a USC basketball fan who's sitting here saying, like, unless he wins a national title, like, get rid of him.
Yeah.
It's just sort of a very basic, like, if USC isn't winning Pac-12 championships, then are you really living up to what you could be as a program? Like, so are you okay with never winning Pac-12 championships?
When you're in a conference with a couple of blue bloods
who have not been particularly dominant,
who have combined to win two national championships in the last 100 seasons.
In the last 10 years, what have those two teams done? What have Arizona and UCLA done in the last 10 years?
That's valid, and but Oregon, they've always been there. Oregon has been the one that to
Oregon,
win
Oregon
string
has,
of titles.
Has won
yes,
Pac-12s. But
what I'm saying, like, the difficult part about this is you look at all the coaches that SC has had, you know, recently, in the last 30 years, really, right? There haven't been that many coaches. George Raveling, of course, took SC to their highest ever AP final ranking, at least of our lifetime, number 8 in 1992. They believe they were number 2 seed in 1992. And then SC was 7th and 5th in 61 and 71, but didn't make the tournament in 71 despite going 24-2. So historically, George Raveling has a great season, right? He has, you know, a great season under his belt. Henry Bibby follows him up, and he takes SC to an Elite Eight. He's followed by Tim Floyd, who takes SC to a Sweet 16 and three straight seasons in which SC was ranked, which Henry Bibby did too. He's followed by Kevin O'Neill, who doesn't pan out, who's followed by Andy Enfield. Andy Enfield, Tim Floyd, and Henry Bibby, and George Raveling, their accomplishments are all basically the same. They're all basically the same. The difference is Andy Enfield has just been very consistent in what he's done, and gotten more time than those other guys. But this is what USC basketball is. SC basketball is a good middle of the road Power 5 team who underachieves historically. And part of that is because their arch rival, depending on who you ask, is either the greatest blue blood of all time or was the greatest blue blood of all time. And they're in a conference that has another very good blue blood fringe team in Arizona. And Oregon consistently is very good. And you know, Dan Altman is one of the best coaches in the country, et cetera. But you can't necessarily say that about Andy Enfield. And that's what you want.
That's all I'm saying. I'm saying is that if Oregon can have Dana Altman, then why does USC settle for Andy Enfield?
To me, that is the best argument there is like, yes, Oregon should not be out doing what SC does, considering SC's recruiting ability, SC's stature in LA and all that stuff. Obviously, SC cares about basketball because they pay Andy Enfield well, and he's, you know, been around a while, and he's recruiting and all that stuff. But like, I'm not a basketball expert. I'm not going to sit here and tell you why his teams are failing. I the way I look at it, this is SC basketball just being relevant every year by making the tournament, and you know.
This is better than USC basketball being bad, but like, yes. is it actually worth continue? It's been 10 years. Like it's been 10 years. Andy Enfield has had a chance and he's done again. It's the Clay Helton thing. He's done just good enough to keep extending him. But, like,
but he doesn't have a 5-7 season in the middle.
Yes. Like, and that's why there's not that kind of pressure on him because.
Right. I mean, he does have the losing season in 2019.
It is not particularly easy to argue to fire Andy Enfield. As someone who argues it often, I can tell you this. It is not particularly easy because it is a nuanced argument because,
right.
As Kenny says in the chat, like, there's no historical precedent for USC to be better at basketball.
Exactly. There isn't.
But could they be is the question that Kenny asks. And that's all I'm saying is like, why does Alabama basketball get to do a thing where they have a number one overall, get to be the number one overall seed? Like, why does Baylor basketball get to win a national title?
Right.
Like this, it's not like, only Duke and only Kentucky and only North Carolina and only UCLA are winning things right now. It's like, no, there are teams out there who are doing interesting things in the basketball space to make it like sound like
Ohio State,
like a
Michigan
thing.
Have been good.
Yeah.
Basketball schools.
What rights do those teams, what historical precedent do any of those teams have to be good at basketball? None of them. Like, so why couldn't USC be better at basketball? It would be a risk to fire Andy Enfield. You'd be putting yourself out on a limb and you would be risking the prospect of really destroying all the progress that you made under the Enfield era where you were consistently getting in the field. But again, like I'm tired of where USC basketball is at. I'm ready to take the next step.
It's a weird catch 22 because I like, you get rid of Enfield, and like suddenly, maybe it's the Bo Pelini moment. But like I mentioned,
but what's the
literally
worst
every
happen?
Coach in our lifetime, with the exception of Kevin O'Neill, and even he went to an NCAA tournament.
But that's
like,
my
like
point. What's
every
the worst
single one has had that one good season and then a few good years and a couple of bad ones. Enfield has avoided the bad ones because he started with a couple of really bad seasons and then put everything together in year three since.
He's been recruiting exceptionally well. Like the recruit, that's part of his downfall is like, when I see all of these great recruits that you're bringing in, when you're bringing in the number one recruit in the country, and it's not just him and a bunch of scrubs because you're getting good transfers in, you're getting good secondary kind of recruits, all that kind of stuff. Like, I'm going to ask more of you. But that's my thing is, if you get rid of Andy Enfield, what's the worst that could happen? 4 years of Kevin O'Neill? I lived through 4 years of Kevin O'Neill. Okay, you fire him because he sucks.
Right.
Like, that's the beauty of that's the beauty of it. Yeah, you could get worse, but like, if he's worse, then you just move on to the next one. Roll your next dice. Well, like, I don't know.
We talk about Tim Floyd. Tim Floyd was here for four seasons, went to a Sweet 16, realistically should have gone to Elite Eight.
Mm-hmm.
North Carolina dead to rights.
And then they weren't. They just couldn't rebound or do anything. Yeah.
The game that will haunt people forever. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, all the off-field stuff becomes an issue. If he avoids that, maybe he's here longer. Maybe he's the guy who, you know, takes SC to the next step. Or maybe he's a lot like Ravlin and Bibby and just never take that next step either.
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah.
I don't know. It's hard. I think the thing for me is SC basketball is relevant in the sense that they are making the tournament more often than not. They are playing key conference games. They are not it's not like the Galen Center is sold out every night, but like they're not playing in front of nobody.
You know what? The other thing that's really helped Enfield justify keeping his job, he beat UCLA.
Yeah.
Just beating UCLA and having a big win every year. And it when feels like there's a big win every year.
When you are the little brother in basketball, which SC is, that sort of matters. I think this is one of those things where it's like, I can understand the argument that, you know, to move on, but it's just, I don't see how he's done enough to not be the guy.
It's not easy necessarily to argue for it. I just would say, go be bold and try to be better. Sure. You're obviously not going to fire him now. Like this is the frustrating thing about it too. It's like the same conversations we were having about Clay Helton a few years ago. It's like, you're not going to fire him after he just won the Pac-12. Like, right. Yeah, he got his butt beat by Ohio State, but he just won the Pac-12, like for the first time in 10 years. Like, you're not going to fire him. So, you know, you persist. You're going to still be, he has the number one recruit. I predict it'll be very similar to what went down with, you know, Evan Mobley potentially. If he has a Sweet 16 run with Collier, then he's probably going to continue to sort of vibe. And I'm going to continue to make my argument that, like, if you have Isaiah Collier, you should be aspiring to more. If you have Evan Mobley, you should be aspiring to more. But like, you know,
you want to know my dreams for SC basketball?
Bronny comes to USC and wins a title.
No, God, no. No. Can we scrub that from the audio? Jeez. Sweet 16. I think SC realistically should make a Sweet 16 every 4 years. I don't think that's a lot to ask.
That's not asking a lot.
I don't think, and that doesn't mean literally every 4 years. I think when you average it out, every 4 years.
When you're recruiting the way that Enfield is, that's not asking too much.
Yes, I think, I don't think that that's asking too much.
No.
And every decade, hope to make to have an Elite Eight in there for sure. And, you know, every 20 years, making a Final Four, like, 15, 20 years making a Final Four. I don't think that's too much to ask for. When we're 80 years old and we're dying at 80 and you're like, well, they made the Final Four 4 times in our lifetime. Like, that makes sense, right?
As we talked about earlier, a 64 team tournament is a crapshoot. Like, if you judge things based, if you're USC and you judge things based on championships, you're just going to be disappointed. I mean, it's very, very difficult to win this whole thing. My thing continues to be just my perception of the team and whether or not they're maximizing their potential or even meeting their potential. I don't feel like they are.
Yeah.
Maybe I expect too much from them. It's maybe I do. Maybe I do. But like, I don't know.
All right. Let's get into the mailbag. We got a bunch of mailbag stuff to get to.
Hey, everyone. It's Mike Silva from Talking Mets. I am always about helping my listeners, and today I want to help you eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. My wife and I tried it, and we love it. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. I was tired after a long day the other night, and I was at the table eating a delicious meal just minutes after walking in the door. Are you looking for a gourmet meal? Try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccoli, and asparagus. You can also choose from a weekly menu of 35 options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Don't forget your add-ons. There are 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. What are you waiting for? The Mets set the playoffs as their goal this year. Get started today and fuel up your springtime goals with Factor. Head to factormeals.com/Mets50 and use code Mets50 to get 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next box. That's code METS50 at factormeals.com/METS50 to get 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. I tried Factor and loved it. Why don't you?
Alicia, you know the only good thing about football season being over?
There's literally nothing good about the football season being over. It's just an endless wait until the fall.
See, that's where you're wrong. It's tournament season. The best way to take your mind off the endless wait.
That is true. I may not want to watch the men play, but the USC women are pretty awesome.
Exactly, but it's not just SC. There's high-stake basketball moments all over the country. But you know what? They get even better with Prize Picks.
So you're saying the only thing better than watching Juju Watkins is taking the more on Juju Watkins.
Bingo. You can now turn your hoops knowledge and love of Juju Watkins into serious cash. Because you can now win up to 100 times your money on Prize Picks with as little as 4 correct picks. Turn $10 into $1,000 with college basketball, NBA, and NHL entries. Best of all, Prize Picks lets you get on the action on more than 30 states across the country, including Texas, Georgia, and California.
That sounds pretty good to me.
Yeah, download the app today and use the code RANDOMTROY for a first deposit match up to $100.
That's the Prize Picks app with the code RANDOMTROY for the first deposit match up to $100.
Pick more.
Pick less.
It's that easy.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You've got mail.
All right. Let's start with a question we got a while back from Randy about who won the over-under for last season. So I've finally put it all together. I'm super excited to talk about this because we should have talked about this a long time ago. And then, of course, the season ended. We had, you know, family emergency for a month. And then this happened, that happened, and here we are. So let's get to some over-under.
So you're going over.
I'm feeling bold. Give me that over.
I'll go under. I got to take an under here. I got 3 unders to take.
I'm going
to
do an under here.
All right. Alicia, the Cotton Bowl results, of course, were doubled, which means that at the end of the season, there were exactly 100 over-unders. 100 over-under points. The winner... We do have a winner.
We do.
With 65. But I want to name off the top 10, and I'll go in reverse order here. Tied for 9th, we have 4 people tied for 9th, which is crazy. 28 pitch, Cali Cat, Cali Matt, and Steven Chod tied for 9th with a 56-44 record. In 8th place, Ocean Beach Trojans, 57-43. Tied for 6th, Randy from Redlands and Scott Cox at 58-42.
Now we got top 5.
Top 5. Sean from Mid-City-ish, 59-41 at number 5. Sean went a perfect 12-0 in the Cotton Bowl.
Wow. Vaulting up the standings then.
He got all 6 right, double points, so 12-0. Hell of a run. But he could not get into the top 4. Number 4. Jay Vandy with a record of 60-40.
Nice.
Tied for 2nd. Carey from Chicago and Moose Pants. Great name, by the way.
Great name, by the way.
63-37 are Carey from Chicago and Moose Pants. Two different people, at least as far as I know. Carey from Chicago went 10-2 in the Cotton Bowl, but could not get to number 1. And number 1 is Ryan from Arizona.
Woo!
Congratulations, Ryan from Arizona. You went 10-2 in the Cotton Bowl, and you win with a 65-35 record. And what a crazy final game it was because, you know, we talked about, you know, the 4 people tied for 9th. Steven Chod was one of those 4 people. Steven Chod went 2-10 in the Cotton Bowl.
Ouch. This feels like me.
And he found a way to go 12-0. Somehow. He wins the whole thing. Just brutal. Brutal. Yep. Just like SC's performance. And also, congratulations for Cali Cat and Cali Matt for tying. I think that's got to be good for discussions at home.
Yeah, it's got to be. Yeah, they were going back and forth. They were trading spots on that leaderboard.
Yeah,
so good to see.
So there we go. And I forgot to look up where you and I finished, but oh well.
Nowhere near the. Folks.
Nobody cares about our.
Nowhere
folks.
Near.
No.
Better that we don't know.
This is true. We got a YouTube comment from Blondie. This is talking about the SC band. When a penalty goes in USC's favor, they play All Right Now. I don't remember them playing anything when USC gets flagged. I've heard other teams play Star Wars at us when we get penalized, to which our pal Richard in the chat responded over our Discord server. And Alicia, what did he have to say? He put together a long list of all the stuff.
Richard is our band guy. He is our inside man when it comes to all band info. So big ups to Richard for setting the record straight. So all the situational music with varying degrees of reliability is as follows. Team runs out the tunnel, fight on. Kickoff, at any point, all I do is win, followed by the go cadence.
Yep.
First down on offense, third down chorus of fight on. Sorry, third chorus of fight on. First down on offense. Sorry, second down on offense. Any drumline cadence. Third down on offense. Charge. Do-do-do-do-do. Charge.
Created by Tommy Walker, former Trojan.
Former Trojan. First down on defense. A cheer or a cadence. Five or less yard gain or a successful stop on third or fourth is tribute to Troy, which is what opposing fans hate. Mm-hmm. I think we play it all the time, and I always tell them, you realize that USC only plays
This is the only song we know.
Yeah. USC plays it when they get a defensive stop, so maybe don't let USC's defense stop you, and you won't hear it. It's same true. With fight yeah. on. Fight, they play fight yeah. on when you get a first down. Stop the first down, so you won't need to hear it. Third down on defense, new tribute to Troy thing. I don't know what that means.
A new little thing.
Yep. After a sack, it's another one bites the dust. Mm-hmm. After a turnover for the opponent.
Only good Queen song, by the way.
Ah, you are so.
It's a terrible band, either way.
Okay. Opponent turnover is All Right Now.
Great free song.
Opponent punt or kick is Block That Kick chant. After a score, but before the extra point, is Fight On from the top. After the extra point is Conquest, the short version. Opponent penalty is Levels. It used to be Doctor Who, which for a very convoluted reason is actually Rock and Roll Part 2, frequently called the Hey Song.
Yeah.
So that makes sense. Which is right. Da, 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 that. Hey.
Dun, dun, dun,
dun, dun. That's sorry. Dun, dun. Yeah, okay. I got it wrong. Yeah. Third quarter break / torch / traveler is the Lone Ranger, but it's really the William Tell Overture. Oh, that's funny. I always think of it as the William Tell Overture, but
yeah,
maybe it's just the William arrangement. Tell. Okay. Penalty on USC is the Imperial March, but only sometimes. And after opponent's first score, but very inconsistently used this way, Sunshine of Your Love.
Yeah.
And then Richard also has dropped into the chat to say that the new tribute thing is a remix that's intended to get more fan noise than just the regular tribute. So I'll have to pay attention for that because I'd be, yeah.
Curious. Yeah. So listen to that on third down. Third down. So
West Texas, sorry, I assume West Texas Mike says new tribute to Troy is played at a higher octave or something. And Richard says Dr. Bartner had weird names for things. That's fair. I feel it. Sometimes you just have a name come to you and that's the one that sticks, even if it's not the most perfect logical name. It's just what the label, what it came to in your head. So, So thank you for setting the record straight on all of these things. I don't know. I'm a nerd. I find it really fun to know the inside baseball of like this is the thing that triggers that thing. And this is the thing that says we're going to play that thing. So yeah, it's very fun.
Yeah. So big shout out to Richard for hooking us up over there with the list. And if you are a member with us in the Rot Squad and are part of our Discord, you can head over to Discord and see what he wrote in the podcast chat. You can always join us here live on YouTube every Monday with a new episode. But you can also join us as a member in the Rot Squad for $4.99 a month. We have extra monthly content, which we'll come out with next week for the month of March, along with chatting with us on Discord and putting together your thoughts with the rest of our community as we get ready between each episode and talking about whatever. SC football, baseball, basketball, the Oscars, whatever people have on their mind. Formula One, probably not because there's not much to discuss. All those things. So
never much to discuss in Formula One.
Certainly ever. Not. So, all right.
Hey, we are about to finish.
We're about to finish a very important TV show.
Yes. And I like part of me thinks that maybe not like the bonus episode, because the bonus episode for the subscribers should be something that's like actually USC focused, but like
yes.
A bonus episode could be
we could record something on the side and just drop it in Discord. There you go. Yeah,
there you go. Then yeah. You really gotta.
Also, I want to do one of those live chat, like a live call-in show, because now that we got this cool soundboard with, you know, like
playoffs. Don't talk about playoffs. You kidding me?
Yeah. You didn't drop that at any point that talking about.
I forgot I had it. Forgot I had it. Anyways, Now that we have this thing, it can connect to callers, so we can bring callers and stuff. So I'm super excited about that. So we can bring some calls back in the mix.
Rose Bowl, baby.
Yeah, we can get you guys back on the show and maybe do a call-in show for the monthly show.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
If not this month, then the future month, sometime. So, yeah, everything's looking onward and upward. We're super excited about it. Big shout out to John from Seattle, who hooked us up with the new soundboard. So, yeah. So things are good over here. We will be back next week to talk about more SC football. Of course, SC was on spring break this past week, so there's no spring camp updates, but they'll continue this week as well.
Yeah, next week we'll have spring camp to talk about, so that'll be fun.
There you go. So, all right, guys. We will be back until then. All right. We will... See you next time. See you.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.